Christian Rob McGregor welcome you to a place where all kinds of phenomena flourish. Voices whisper, ancient secrets, signs and symbols are abundant. UFOs, ETs, ghosts, and even the dead move about freely. Here we meet authors, researchers, and investigators of the mysterious, the strange, and of the inexplicable anomalies that surround us. Step out of the everyday world and take a journey into the mystical underground.
Welcome to the Mystical Underground. Thank you for joining us. This is Rob McGregor and
Trish McGregor.
And our producer and tech magician, John Posey. You can go to themysticalunderground.com where we make regular blog posts and where you can find out about our books. Among them are Phenomena, Harnessing Your Psychic Abilities, The Secrets of Spirit Communication, Sensing the Future, and Aliens in the Backyard. Trish's latest novel is White Crows. Rob's most recent novel is called Tulpas. If you are watching us on YouTube, we would appreciate it if you would take a second to click the like, subscribe, and notification buttons so you never miss an episode. If you prefer to listen to the show, it is available wherever you listen to podcasts. Please subscribe there.
And I want to add one thing to what Rob just said. Our latest nonfiction book is Mind-Blowing Synchronicities, the Latest Science Stories and Research. Our guest today is Mirabai Devi, a spiritual guide and healer with more than 30 years of experience. She's a conduit of the Divine Feminine, or Divine Mother. Her work includes light transmissions, group healings, and private sessions that include intuitive and mediumistic readings, as well as mentoring clients through the steps to self-realization. Attendees often report profound and life-changing transformations that lead to happier, more empowered lives, miraculous healings, and escape from personal darkness and suffering. Mirabai was born in Johannesburg, South Africa, and she travels the world to speak at festivals and spiritual conferences. Yay, Mirabai, you're here again.
Well, welcome back.
Great to see you.
Thank you. Great to see you, all three of you. And thank you for welcoming me back on your show, especially now that I'm live in Maui on the island of Lemuria.
We're all right.
Yeah. Is Maui, is it recovering from the fire?
Maui is slowly rebuilding and recovering from the fire. It's a slow process. It's been a lot of trauma for the local people of Maui on the island and across all of the islands. It's been a big heartbreak, and many are still heartbroken here, but there is efforts to rebuild and reconstruct.
You're in Hawaii, but you often travel for your work. Have you taken any trips to conferences or anything in recent weeks or months?
Well, I just had a very exciting trip to South Africa.
Oh.
And I just presented my workshops in Cape Town, southernmost tip of Africa.
Oh, cool.
World. Mm. And just led some workshops and some private sessions there with the Cape Town South African community and met a bunch of new people that'll probably be watching this show because they're now on my mailing list.
Okay.
And so, that's always my goal, is to travel out to different countries and different parts of the world and then integrate more of an international community so that we can spread the word, you know, to more people. It's all about awakening right now on a global level. Yeah. So travel would mainly be South Africa. And then I've also been, I've been teaching quite heavily for the last 6 months before South Africa in the whole northeast of the United States.
Now, when you travel like...
Huh?
I mean, do you ever get travel lag? I mean, do you ever feel tired from all this moving around?
Well, yes, very much so. And also, the flights themselves and traveling is no fun anymore in the US or internationally, especially with the pandemic and also since 9/11 with the heightened security. But being in different communities and different places with my beloveds around the world is just such, it's so fulfilling and rewarding. It's hard to really stop doing that.
When you're going to South Africa, which way do you go? Do you travel east or do you travel west? It seems like it's kind of the opposite side of the world.
Yes, this was a very interesting trip that I just took, actually, because this time I actually, when I was flying back from South Africa, I flew all the way from South Africa to London, and then I flew up through Scotland and over the Scottish Islands and through Greenland, Iceland, Canada, and then down the West Coast.
Wow.
And then across to Hawaii. So I literally went like that. Okay. And the same thing going there.
Oh, the same direction. Yeah, okay.
Pretty much, yes, yes. Yeah. So that was, I could just honestly say I've just come back from halfway around the world.
Right. Yeah, yeah, really, literally.
Yeah.
Literally.
What can you tell us about the Divine Masters who came to you as a child?
Yeah, so my closest connection, I would say, is with Avatar Mahababaji, which was the teacher of Jesus Christ, or Yeshua ben Joseph, as his name was, as well as certain beings would say that he is also an incarnation or an avatar of many of the different gods. And I would say the Lord Krishna and Yeshua ben Joseph, Jesus the Christ, Mother Mary, Mary Magdalene, are some of the main teachers that came to me, or divine avatar masters that came to me when I was a young child. And there are other ones also that I have worked with and continue to work with through this entire incarnation. So there were 7 main masters that came to me from birth to 3 years old. And they instructed me when I was 3 years old that they all had the eyes that were identical. They had the same look, the same energy, the same eyes. And so I asked them, what is it? Why do you have the same eyes as one another? And the answer they gave was, because we are in oneness. Huh. We understand and know that there is only one being. And one day you will come to understand and experience that also. So that was,
you were only 3
awakening at 3 years old. That then propelled me into an astral travel awakening that started from 3 to 7. I was in conscious astral travel, which means that it was not just happening during a sleep state. It was also happening during awake states.
Wow.
So that basically was, I don't know how far out there your audience goes as far as talking about the planets, realms, and dimensions that I went to. But during that time, I was always taken from my mother's house when I was 3 to 7 years old. So I was at home, and I was taken from my family home through particular portals. I knew exactly where those portals were, and every night we'd go out through the same portals. There were, you know, a range of them would go out through one or the other, and there was always a master guide that would take me to different planets or different realms or different dimensions. And during that time, I was intensively trained through to 7 on how to basically activate the seed of light in the heart of a human, destroy negativity and release it from human beings, and then raise their vibrational frequency and transmit light into them. That was the main
one. Did you tell your parents this? Did your parents know all this?
No.
Okay.
No. I did not talk about that to my parents. My parents just know about my invisible playmates that were guides. That I used to play with the nature spirits.
Yeah,
there, so okay. Tell them about that. Those guys.
So when you were 3 years old, did you have any memory of a recent past life at that time related to this life?
No, not from 3 to 7. I wasn't so much in the memory of it as in oh, I was this character and I did this thing. Mm-hmm. What it was more was that I was very, very angry when I was born in a body because I was leaving my body in the previous life and I was in an enlightened state and I was going up a tunnel or a column of light and I was merging back into the Godhead and I had completed that incarnation and I had said, I'm never coming back to the earth again. I'm done with the earth. And then the next thing I knew, I was being dropped back into a human body. And I was furious. Why did you do this to me? Why did you make me come back here? But then it was only later on, years later, when I did a lot of work on that, that I came to understand that, of course, I agreed to it. Otherwise, I wouldn't have come. I was forced to come. But I came back on a service mission to help humanity. Hard to explain these things, but I'm a galactic citizen, which means I'm not from the Earth. None of us are. And I had a lot of memories of the different galaxies that I've lived in, different planets I've lived on, and things like that. And so when I was a child, learning human was a challenge and understanding why do people get sick? Why do people grow old? Why do people have special kinds of things happening to their mind or their bodies, special needs and so forth, because in the planets and the worlds that I was coming into contact with as a very young child in my memory body, we communicated telepathically without words. We communicated through the eyes. We communicated from the heart. These are places like the Pleiades, right? And Andromeda, talking about Arcturus and things like that, where we don't communicate with words. We don't, our bodies don't die or get old in those ways. We live for longer periods of time. So from the planets of light, from the dimensions of light, even once you go up to certain dimensions, these things don't happen. So understanding, why do people hurt each other in this world? Why do people hurt animals in this world? All of those things as a child, I was constantly asking questions because I didn't understand. And I'm sure a lot of you can relate, and you guys can relate as well to that. You know, it just makes no sense.
So why did the divine masters come to you when you're at that age? Was it, were you familiar with them at that point from other lives or what? Tell us about
number one, I was familiar with them from other lives. Number two, they were coming here. They were bringing me here to fulfill a specific mission. So I was undergoing training and they were checking on me as a baby at a very young age. They were checking on me. And then reminding me very slowly and preparing me from birth to three, they were preparing me for the work that began at 3 to 7, where I was consciously astral traveling. And how I still retain all those memories, I don't know. I don't remember some of the day-to-day things. Who remembers the day-to-day? But I remember the astral journeys that I was taken on. So
you have a big hard drive.
Yeah. Yeah.
Rabbi, I'm curious too. What? I just forgot my question listening to my dog bark. what is it that, how do your teachings differ depending on where you are? In other words, do you teach in the same way in South Africa that you do in Hawaii or that you do in the Northeast, or do things shift?
Well, Trish, I have a large range of teachings. So it depends on any given year, any given month, what I'm inspired to do in the moment. Sometimes.
Sorry, that's our dog. Go ahead.
Oh, I'll wait till
Till the dog stops barking.
Till the dog
rarely
stops.
Does this. That's so weird.
Yeah, sorry, John, about the doors slamming here. It's quite breezy today. I think you heard two doors slamming. Hopefully we can edit that out.
Okay. All right.
Sorry about that.
No, what was problem. He working at?
Who knows? A dog walked by. He said hello.
Always.
Yeah.
Okay, should we start that question again?
Yeah, I was just curious how your teachings change depending on where you are.
Yeah, so it depends on any week, month, or year, depending on what themes I'm inspired to give. I have a lot of different topics and a lot of themes and messages. One thing is always consistent. Light transmission is always in every workshop. And also, I typically always give some form of a channeled guided meditation. And there's always a teaching. And the teaching can range on any topic. There's always some form of healing. Healing work that's done with a group, healing work that's done with individuals. Mm-hmm. And that could range between energy work and light work. But topics could be about activating Kundalini. They could be about astral travel. They could be about connecting with your higher self. They could be about healing your inner child. They could be about energy work and the chakras. They could be about developing samadhi and higher states of consciousness. They could be about working with the angelic realms. And what are the different hierarchies of the angelic realms, and how do you call on and work alongside with your angels? They could be about connecting to your deeper trauma and releasing stuck or blocked emotional, mental, physical traumas that come from your karma or your family lineage karma or your past life karma. It could be an Akashic record reading workshop. There's so many things I would say that it's my toolkit. Is quite heavy.
When are you going to write a book? That's what you need.
Speaking to some of the most prolific authors on the planet, I think I need a little help.
Yeah. So when you talk about healing, are you mostly talking about mental and emotional healing, or how about physical healing from different disorders that injuries somebody might have? Is that in the realm of what you do?
Yeah, well, let me just circle back. Before I answer your question, Rob, I'm just going to answer Trish's question quickly. Trish, my first book, Samadhi, is self-published and on Amazon. I have enough material for about 30 or 40 books right now.
Yeah, that's for sure.
It's just about formatting and putting it together and to sit down and have the time. So working about, 12 to 18 hours a day, especially when I'm on tour with groups and individuals and all the volunteers and stuff and community and getting all the background stuff done takes so much time. I just don't have the time to sit down and collate it. So I think I just need somebody to collate it all,
I think it'd be interesting to hear your stories in a book about different realms and dimensions and
I think
planets
so too.
That you have traveled to. That would be quite a journey.
Yes, yes, definitely, yes. And I also do a lot of life between life work. So when people pass, I help people cross over. And then when they cross over, they're on the other side and I work with them on the other side. I also help them to cross to where they're going to go to and all the phases until they're complete with their healing phase. And then I help them also choose their next incarnations, watching them move into their next lives. So I do a lot of communication with souls that have crossed over or passed on. And that includes working with masters and guides that also help on the other side with that process. So the dimensions that people go to and the worlds they go to, you'd be surprised. You really would be surprised how it can feel the same even when you're not in a body, because we have lighter bodies, more subtle bodies that we're in, but we're still in worlds. They may not be dense worlds, but they still look and feel as real as this looks and feels. Just like when you have a dream, and in your dream, you're another character and you're in a different world. It's the same thing when you leave your body. You're just a different character. You're in a different world, or maybe you're the same character and everything feels completely real, but it's just a different dimensional frequency, a different density, different types of beings. Sometimes there's aliens that are there, meaning they're coming in from other planets or worlds, but that feels totally normal when you're on the other side, when you're in their world, right? you don't feel strange about that. It's only on Earth that we have this, you know, intensity around it.
Well, when you do this work, do you see animals too?
Yes.
That have crossed over? You do. Do you help them?
Yes. Very much so. Yes.
How? How do you? Can you speak to them?
Yes. Oh, sorry. Let me answer your question.
Okay.
I'm getting all excited there. I'm getting ahead of myself. yes, it's all since I was maybe 17 to 21 years old, when I reawakened, I started the process of communicating with people that had had strokes or that were in comas or that had Down syndrome.
Okay.
And so I learned to telepathically communicate with them without verbal words. That led me into hearing animals speaking. Once I learned to telepathically communicate with humans, they were mute for those various reasons. I learned to communicate with animals. Whether you're communicating with a horse, a dog, a cat, an elephant, or a lion, it's all the same, right? It's all the same. They're all like people. They have different personalities. They have different moods. They have feelings. They have good days. They have bad days. So that's what a lot of humans don't understand. And so when you're on the other side of that veil, it's hard to understand humans. It's hard to understand that
you don't know
that or don't experience that. I also started to communicate with the spirits of trees and the spirits of plants. And that was something I had to develop later on. That didn't come as easily to me. I had to spend a long time sitting with trees and sitting with plants before I could see their auras and see their spirits and start dialoguing. And then I would take down translation or interdimensional communication from tree spirits and plant spirits. That then led me into better communication with the angelic realms, because a lot of those nature devas cross over into the higher angelic. A lot of those tree spirits become very high angelic beings, and they go through their own evolutionary process. A lot of this was just through practice and trial and error. First, you learn to see the aura. Then you learn to see the chakras. First, you learn to telepathically communicate with a human that can't speak, then an animal. Then you could move to a tree. Then you move to a plant, then you move to a stone or a rock. You know, it's all developmental stuff that now I try to teach people to do.
How about healing?
Do you have any? Oh, go ahead.
Yeah. How about healing related to like somebody with cancer, some difficult situation like that? Is that possible?
Yeah. So I honestly, what I would say is God is the healer. The work that I do is to cleanse them. The work is to cleanse what's causing the issue.
So
whether it's a cancer or whether it's a which is a more aggressive condition, or whether it's a less aggressive condition, there's always a cause and causes. So my work is to clear the causes and try to help with the symptoms, and usually clearing the causes and helping with the symptoms will make an improvement, whatever kind.
Because I've heard many times of these cases of people who have cancer, and suddenly they go back to the doctor and they can find no sign of it at all. Something happened to them that just vanished. And the doctors are more confused than the patient.
Exactly. Well, you know that I can't legally make any claims.
Sure.
But I can say that there are miracles that happen all the time.
Yeah.
And I've witnessed countless miracles. And again, it's from cleansing the individual from the causes of the issue and helping with the symptoms. And sometimes it's pretty miraculous, the result.
Yeah. Speaking of miracles, have you had anything like experiences with levitation or bilocation or manifestation of objects, like a show me a flower, you know, like that.
Show me a shell.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's funny. I have experienced levitation myself.
Wow.
In very, very high states of samadhi, or what I call unity consciousness. I have had quite a few, I would say probably about 20 to 30 different occasions of levitation experiences that I've had. Some have been where I've participated in the process. Some have been where I'm bewildered by the experience, and some have been where the divine just has lifted me up completely out of my body's control.
Has anybody witnessed this as it's happening?
I've experienced by location only when individuals have seen me in multiple places around the world at the same time. But I have been unaware of it. I've had people say that they've met me in places like Mexico or other parts of the world where they had a conversation with me, and I physically was not there. So I've had reports like that over the years. And as far as manifestation of objects and energies and things, I have several, many different saints that I know of that materialize vibhuti, herbs, shivalingams, lingams, statues, rings, that sort of thing. I personally have not had those experience, even stigmata in the hands of the crown. What I have experienced is through various periods where divine beings were training me, I've experienced white glitter with rainbow colors appearing on my palms, like dust, and falling off my palms. And I've experienced literally coins dropping off the ceiling while I'm sleeping at night, waking me, jumping up and seeing and literally seeing and hearing coins falling from the ceiling. I do have in my house in South Africa, I do have statues that have grown ash, holy ash, vibhuti, and are covered in ash that pours off the statues and drips over and fills the shelves of those holy beings that has materialized on the statues themselves.
Have you traveled in India at all?
In 1992, I lived in India for about 6 weeks. And then a couple of weeks after, out in that state, in that awakened state that was in Goa. And that followed on after living in an ashram with an avatar. I don't like to mention names. And then after the 6 week awakening experience, then I did go on to Auroville and Aurobindo, Sri Aurobindo's ashram, and then head back to South Africa. So I would say all in all, that trip was probably up to, 2 or 3 months, probably, excuse me, not 2 or 3 months, but up to 3 months. Second time I went to India was with Thomas Ashley Ferran Namadeva, who is from the, website is Sanskrit Mantra. And he was, as far as I'm concerned, one of the world's foremost experts on mantra outside of India. And he and his wife, Satyabhama, led a pilgrimage through North and South India. It was one of those whirlwind tours. And we had the great blessing of meeting the Shankaracharya, one of the four Shankaracharyas, who's the Pope. There's four popes in India of Hinduism. We met one of them. And we also met some very, very great high saints, gurus, yogis, whatever you want to call them, that were in very advanced, evolved stages. We also visited many temples. But that was quite the whirlwind tour, and I have not been back since then. That was in 2005.
Yeah. So why do you think there is so much more reports of miracles and similar events in India than in other parts of the world?
United States?
Is it a mentality of the people that are different than the Western world? Or
yes, so in the West, we're trained to shut down our spiritual gifts, our spiritual senses, and our spiritual abilities, because we're told that those gifts and abilities are of the devil, or they're evil, or they're, you know, they're coming from the dark side. And so this is how religions train people in the West. And so a lot of people that have those kinds of gifts and abilities end up in psychiatric wards in the West, being drugged and medicated, which is why I've often thought that if I or somebody like me were to go into certain psychiatric wards, we'd probably be able to tell very clearly which one's actually having direct contact with angels, divine masters, elemental beings, ultra-terrestrials, and so forth. And they're having these profound awakening experiences, but the kundalini has kind of got to such a strong level they can't mentally or physically relate to the 3D world at this point. So they get put in psychiatric wards by their families because to the family members, they appear to be insane, right? They've lost their mind or they're possessed, one or the other. So then they either take the family, either takes them to an exorcist priest, or they take them to a psychiatric ward. And in India, these things are trained through Vedic scriptures, thousands of years old, to develop higher states of consciousness, four stages of samadhi, the two lower stages, the two upper stages, the eightfold path of yoga, the limbs, the eight limbs, you know, the path of Patanjali. And these developmental stages can actually be mapped out and developed through the science of yogic philosophy. So in the Indian tradition, it's taught that the spiritual is the tree, the psychic is the fruit. Grow the tree, develop the tree. Develop the consciousness, develop the connection with the divine. Connect with the absolute. Don't get distracted by the psychic phenomenon. The psychic phenomenon are just going to come as the fruit growing on the tree as you develop your tree. Because when you're going for the divine, when you want to go home, when you don't want to keep reincarnating through samsara, you don't want to just get distracted by the psychic world or the psychic phenomenon. So those are you're taught to witness them, but not get too excited about them. Whereas in the West, you know, people spend their whole lives trying to, you know, develop those things, but they don't understand that they are just the fruit of the tree. You can't grow the fruit without having a tree. And that's where the ignorance is set in the West. And you see this separation consciousness with all the psychic development, but there's no spiritual development.
Yeah. So okay, you talk about how
well-rounded. You see what I'm saying, Ron?
Yeah. Yeah. You're talking about the siddhis, siddhis, S-I-D-D-H-I-S, that are, you know, considered like more of a lower level of spirituality in a sense in the East, in to some extent, because people go beyond them that after, you know, maybe experiencing them, but, you know, their own personal evolution takes them beyond exhibiting those abilities.
Yes, sure, but explain to me how you see.
Sorry, Trish, I just want to say I love that you said that, Bob, because when I was talking about, I know probably I've met about five different saints or masters or avatars personally that I have either been friends with or visited or met briefly that materialize vibhuti, ash or oil, rose oil or statues, murtis, or rings or herbal medicines or jewelry and things like that. And these things, usually they'll explain that these are like calling, these siddhi powers are calling cards to draw the masses to them, because that's the psychic phenomena that humans love to see and they want to see, because it's like flies to honey, you know, they just they want that stuff because it gives them the proof that God exists, that something beyond this physical plane or dimension exists. Yes. Whereas for most people, they don't even believe that, right? Most people are based in the 3D matrix, third dimension, that's all there is. You know, you die, go into the ground, you're meat for the worms, right?
But there's a shift going on, right?
That's what I was about to add. Yeah, she keeps saying how we're awakening. So tell me how we are awakening, because right now it seems like a lot of people are asleep.
At least in this part of the world.
Yeah, in this part of the world. Maybe not in India.
Well, and can I also say that, you know, for the last 35 to 40 years, there's been a real attempt to take spirituality out of the everyday world.
Exactly.
In the West, so,
yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is true. Okay. So this is what I'm going to say. I have many philosophies that I could teach from. You could look at the philosophy that a whole of humanity is awakening. So the dark forces are trying to block that and stop that as much as they possibly can, because all of humanity is raising up in awareness and consciousness and awakening. So if you look at where 30 years ago, I was one of the, you know, handful of people that was leading these type of movements globally. Now there's so many people that are healers and energy workers and working with health and wellness and well-being and wholeness and all the whole gamut.
And light language.
What's that?
and speaking in light language.
And so many people speaking. Everybody's a Reiki master. Everybody's speaking.
Yeah.
Everybody's doing crystal ball healings. You know, it's just like the trend of our time.
Right.
Yoga teacher. So these are things that were more rare when I was growing up. And when I was coming into all this line of work, we were the ones who had to, you know, I went to India. I went to the Findhorn Foundation, Scotland. We had to go to the top of the Himalayas to find this stuff.
Yeah.
Now it's everywhere.
Yeah.
So but some of it's fake, too. Some of it, I feel, is an act. It's phony. So how do you determine what's real and what isn't? You know, what's BS and...
In Patanjali's Yoga Sutras, one of my Bibles, right? The Yoga Sutras of Patanjali. It says you have to know what the truth tastes like, smells like, sounds like, feels like, and actually is. Mm-hmm. The more awakened you are, the more you can tell what's truth and what's fake.
Mm-hmm.
The less awakened you are, the less you can tell. So now let's say somebody gets a fake teacher and then they get burnt and heartbroken and they fall off the spiritual path, never want anything to do with it again because of a fake teacher or a fake healer or whatever it is, that burn. Well, wouldn't you say that that's their karma? What's the difference between having that or an abusive husband or abusive wife, whatever else they were to manifest in their life, an abusive partner? It's the same thing. It's just in a different form. Karma is karma. You're going to play it out one way or the other. So in the Sufi tradition, they say that the awakening wisdom is up to the student, not the teacher. Because you could have a fake teacher and that could be your awakening. That could burn up your last karma and you could become awakened from hearing that karma. You just don't know how these things work, because the tapping that you see on the physical or third dimensional realm is real. Everything is the underlying reality behind it.
That's a good point.
I think what Trish is talking about is manifest sometimes in India, where Western tourists go to India seeking a spiritual experience, and they're kind of taken by these people who might be after their money or whatever.
No, that's not what I was talking about. I was talking about the United States.
Okay.
I've never been to India. So, you know.
Okay. Yeah. So, of course, you know, there's people that have done a weekend workshop in Reiki, and now they're...
Yeah.
All these people that are saying, you know, that they're experts in X, Y, and Z, and they've just basically gone out there and done their own thing. Mm-hmm. And they may or may not be, you know, channeling the right source of energy or the true light or whatever, any which way you want to look at it. So It's really hard for beginners to know, and that's why so many people get advantage of. So yes, they get their money taken, but that's their karma. That's right. I don't mean it in a passive way, like, oh, it's just their karma.
Yeah.
I don't mean it like that. I mean, we are going to manifest and have the experience of whatever we need to burn through or learn or understand or grow through in this any given incarnation. So if we don't have a true spiritual guide, it's very challenging to navigate the spiritual path when you're young spiritually or energetically.
Were you raised in a religious tradition?
Yeah.
Also?
Okay. I was, yes.
What religion?
Christian?
I was born full-blooded Jewish, both mother and father Jewish.
Uh-huh.
And then my mother converted to Catholicism because she found Jesus when I was 3 years old.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So Jesus, by way of you, maybe.
Yeah, by way of you.
That would make sense. Yeah, that would make sense. So when I was three, Jesus appeared to her and she was given the guidance to stand up for herself, set boundaries, and move out of her marriage that she'd been in five children with. And it was an abusive marriage. And she said that Jesus held her hand and said, I will support you. And she raised the five of us by herself. And she had contact with our dad, but it was very little. And it was, you know, we still had some. But the reality was that the negativity that came through my father was a blessing in my awakening. I do believe my father played a big role in the awakening of me and my siblings. Mm-hmm. Because whenever we are confronted with negativity from one of our parents, it forces us to seek a higher ground, to seek a higher path, a higher consciousness, to find solutions to survive it, right? And that's certainly one of the reasons I believe that we moved forward in our lives.
Let me ask you a question, Mirabai. My mother had Alzheimer's, and my sense was it was because if your consciousness isn't focused here, it has to be focused elsewhere. And there were a number of times when I felt she had contracted for this because she didn't believe in death. She was afraid to die. And even though she was raised Catholic, I don't think she bought all the Catholic stuff. And one day, a psychic friend and I went down to see her in a place where she was living. And my mother said, oh, my brother was just here. And my friend Millie said, is his name Dick? And my mother said, yeah. And Millie says, he's sitting at the foot of your bed. She could see the spirits. So anytime after that that my mother talked about a dead relative visiting her, I believed her. You know, and I felt that was part of the reason she got Alzheimer's, so that she could see that there was something beyond death.
Exactly. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. She went beyond the veils. She could see what was on the other side of the veils. She could see what was in the other worlds. And she was given that gift. And yes, it is possible for those neuro pathways to open, which drop the veils of the 3D world. Can see what's in the other realms and dimensions. And that is very, very helpful. It's not necessarily we want to get Alzheimer's for that.
Yeah.
But it is.
We'd rather not.
Correct. It is a blessing that that happened for her.
Mm.
Could you talk about a little bit about the nature of the spirituality that is happening in Hawaii?
I would say that I have been involved more in the Ho'oponopono, the peacemaking, the forgiveness prayers, the forgiveness practices, this sort of thing. I've worked specifically with more white Western teachers that teach Ho'oponopono, forgiveness prayers, that type of thing. Mm-hmm. I haven't as much worked with traditional Hawaiians that would be more kahunas. I have a little bit. I worked with some kahunas that are quite famous or even very famous in the communities here as being, you know, real kahunas, which means elders, kahunas, which means medicine people. But I have not as much, worked with them individually, as opposed to just shared the platform for teachings and workshops and programs and that sort of thing. But there is a very deep-seated Hawaiian community around hula and Hawaiian medicine and Hawaiian spirituality. And they sort of, hula halaus often bridge between the dancing as well as the lomi lomi massage, as well as the spiritual side of the teachings around the Hawaiian traditions, as you know, and so on and so forth.
And what is their what is their interpretation of the fires that have happened in Hawaii?
That was going to be my question.
I would say the interpretations of the fires that are happening are something I can't really talk about online, because it's I would say it's more along the lines of incompetence. It's along the lines of arson, things like that.
Yeah. Okay. Right.
Interesting.
Who do you pray to? You have all these experiences with different masters. Do you pray to one in particular or many?
Yes, I pray to Divine Mother. I pray to the light, the divine infinite light. I pray to the Divine Father. I really feel the overlighting presence of Divine Mother in all of her various names and forms. I feel a tremendous connection with the Divine Feminine, the Shakti that created the known universe or the known world. I feel the presence of the Divine Light, the Divine Energy in everything. Everywhere, all the time. And I talk to my higher self, the aspect of the divine that I would say is kind of like my own personal guardian angel. And then, of course, the avatars that I mentioned at the beginning, many of those different avatars.
Have they stayed with you all these years?
Avatar Babaji, Lord Krishna, Jesus the Christ, and so forth. Yes, they have. Yes.
How do you define the concept of divine light?
Well, divine light is the unseen force or power that manifests the physical known universe. It brings all of creation into form, into being. Right?
That's so big.
Pretty big, yeah. So everything, everywhere, as the living
all essence, at once.
All at once, of all things.
Huh. How do you, when you heal an animal, what is it? What does your work entail that's living now in this dimension?
I would say that when I'm working with an animal, the biggest thing that I'd be working with is either a physical illness or disease, or an animal that's elderly. And it would be to work with whatever condition they're dealing with to help to release the pain or the suffering, or to help them live longer, or to reduce the disease or the illness. So there would be some telepathic communication, some light transmission, some energy work done, and that would and has increased the lives of animals to live longer and has taken physical pain away from them. Because animals have a nervous system where they feel the light much more quickly and immediately than humans. Because humans have more filters, more blocks that are in the way.
That makes sense.
Could you speak about the concept of this reality as an illusion?
Yes. So everything in the third dimensional world is the appearance, the form of the energy. Behind each condition, each circumstance is a thought form of creation, is also a cause or a reason behind each thing. So when you are tuned into the underlying realities, you're able to see things as God intended them or as they were intended to be. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it does.
Okay. So each experience that we're having is an illusion in the sense that the soul is eternal. This body is a temporary form. This world is a temporary form. So what we are experiencing is temporary. It's transitory. It's coming. It's going. We see it. We experience it. It's gone. When we leave this body, when we leave this world, it's no longer there, right? It's part of the past. So that is because there are different realms, different dimensions that are created, that are part of the creation. And we move.
Uh-oh. She froze.
Just as she said the word move.
Yeah.
John, same position you guys are.
I think we froze for a minute.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah, right. Just yep. as you yep. said the word moved, you froze.
Hey, this is just good. Moved. This is good drama for the podcast. So keep it going. Yep.
Yeah. So you move from one world to the next, from one reality to the next, from one dimension to the next. This life, this world is temporary. Our soul goes on to live in many, many different mansions. As Jesus said, my Father's house is many mansions. We live in many different worlds, many dimensions, many planets. We have many experiences. This is just a temporary one that will soon be a part of our past, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I can see how you're explaining illusion. But what about enlightenment? What is your definition of enlightenment?
So we remember everything.
Enlightenment is moving from being asleep to being awake. It's the remembrance of who we are. It's awakening to who we are as a soul, as a being of light, a light being in this world.
Okay. Yeah.
It makes sense.
Yes.
What's your next stop? What's your next place?
Well, I'm in the Hawaiian Islands until the end of April. Okay. And then a brief stop in Sedona on my way back to the East Coast. And then I'll be in Massachusetts and for the most part, and upstate New York through the summer and into the fall.
Let people know where can they find you, Mirabai? Yes. Like if they want to go to one of your sessions.
Yeah, so the best place to find me if people want to go to one of my sessions is to go on mirabaidevi.org, my website, mirabaidevi.org, and also to be able to check out my events pages and to get signed up on my newsletter or my mailing list, and then you'll receive constantly all the different many events that I'm doing in different cities and different countries around the world. And of course, these are regular and they're on Zoom, so people can join from anywhere in the world.
Okay.
I always make the in-person events on Zoom too for those that can't show up in that city. Uh-huh. And then they can join on Zoom. And then the combination means there's always a group that can be there in person and enjoy the experience.
Right. Okay. This is great.
Thanks for joining the Mystical Underground. Visit www.themysticalunderground.com for the latest blog post and book info. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, or your favorite podcast app. Listen to the podcast at podcast.themysticalunderground.com. Follow Trish and Rob on Instagram at Trish and Rob McGregor. Follow us on Twitter at The Mystic Cast. Send email to podcast@themysticalunderground.com. And until next week, thank you for listening and stay mystical.